and my first guest today are suffering through what I suppose is every parent's nightmare. It's a terribly tragic, terribly sad loss. But they want to talk about this today because they don't want other families to go through what they are going through, I think. And they're Elaine and Johnny Downey from Tipperary. And a few weeks ago, they lost their only child, Jack, after Jack took a substance at a music festival. Jack was 19 years old. Elaine and Johnny, you're welcome and thanks so much for coming in. Can I say first, on behalf of all of us on the team, I imagine everybody listening as well, and on behalf of myself, I'm so sorry for your troubles. It's just desperately sad. How are you both coping? Johnny?
A lot of bad days. It's hard to get out of bed some of the days, you got to get up. You got to face the world. It's not what Jack would want me is to throw myself in bed, but I have found it hard. But you do. You put one foot forward and you draw strength from your friends, your family, and I realise after Jack's death is that friends and family are very, very important and were a lot, lot more than I thought I actually had. Phenomenal support from the Friday, the 2nd of August to today's date. You know, yeah. Unbelievable support by everybody. I have three families, I suppose you could say, you know, in the sense that I have Elaine and my own family, you know, I have my job's family, Garda Síochána, and I also had Clonmaloch and the GA. At large, and Clonmel community was unbelievable. It was unbelievable support.
Yeah, it does sound like Jack was a very well-loved guy in all those communities and that there was an extraordinary outpouring of support. Elaine, it must all still feel a bit unreal, does it?
Every day is worse than the day before. That's...
Yeah.
For sure. It's just unbelievable the amount of people that have come to us, have written to us, have come to our house, made tea, and our neighbours, our wonderful neighbours, our fabulous families, the guards, Clonmel at large, Clonmel Óg were indebted to him. They were just fabulous. All his school pals, people from everywhere, the letters and cards of sympathy we've received, and the bouquets of flowers, and oh my God, everyone is just so wonderful to us.
Yeah.
But Jack was a fantastic person.
Yeah, because people are great when it comes down to it, they get a bad rap, but people are great in situations like this. But I think part of that, Elaine, is the fact of that Jack was, it sounds like he was a bit of a force
Jack
of nature, was he?
Everyone's. He just loved everyone, and he could talk to anyone. He, wherever he went, he was a great fellow for a chat, and he went to all the matches, and I brought him the length and breadth of the county to matches, club matches, and he loved everyone, and everyone loved Jack.
And you brought him to the matches. You and Jack were very, very close, I think, weren't they? I mean, all Irish lads are very close.
To their mammies.
But it sounds like you and Jack were particularly close.
We went on our road trips and to club matches from Daga to Mullinahone to Feather to Carrick. He just was a great supporter of all the different clubs, and he admired many players and different clubs, and he just enjoyed meeting people and getting slitters from matches. He had to get a slitter from every match.
So how many slitters are in the house?
Unbelievable. Our front porch is full of hurleys and slitters.
About 700, I'd say.
And,
from different clubs around the...
Yeah.
And hurleys, and we went to all the different hurley makers around the county, and...
Because he made hurley, he fixed hurleys, didn't he?
He repaired them, yeah.
Grandad Stephen made him a workbench, and it was in the kitchen. And that's where he repaired the hurleys, yeah. He banded the hurleys.
Another thing I noticed is that he was great friends with his granddad. They would talk to each other every day on the phone, is
every
that right?
Every evening, 7 o'clock, granddad would ring. And I'd say there's not a book about a sports person that Grandad hasn't given him.
And after Jack passed away, that some of my colleagues were above in the sitting room, and the phone rang, you know, and it was the landline, and they were wondering, what in the name of God is that? Like, I mean, who has a landline at this day and age? I says, that has to be kept there, because Grandad Stephen rings every evening just around 7:10 to talk to Jack about his day.
Yeah.
You know, it could be 3 minutes, it could be 6 minutes. If Jack didn't happen to be there, there was no point in me answering the phone, because I knew exactly who the call was for.
Yeah.
It was for Jack. That was every evening.
There's a lot of young lads wouldn't talk to older people or would have no interest. But Jack clearly wasn't that kind of guy. He was a people person.
He spoke to everybody, and he could strike up a conversation with anyone, couldn't he, Johnny?
Yeah.
He was just unbelievable. And he could talk about anything, like... There was nothing in sport, I suppose, especially, that he couldn't relate to people with. He was just...
Young and old, yeah. He could speak to everyone, like, you know, and at their level, if that makes sense. Like, you know, I mean, just there recently, he commented about some young fellow from Wexford. He's only 16, and he says, Dad, watch him, he's going to make it big, you know. And, like, it would be very rare that... the Tipperary boys would be meeting in Wexford, but he was able to follow a young fella's progress below in Wexford, and he said he's going to make it, you know. So,
and it sounds very much like the GAA was kind of a huge part of his life, wasn't it?
Oh, massive. Absolutely massive.
Well, everything centred around training, matches, going to Hurley Makers. Yeah, that was my whole... Yeah, I just worked in between those appointments.
Right.
Yeah.
And kind of, I think you used the phrase about him, Johnny, that he was a giant of a man. He was a big kind of strong, handsome guy with presence.
He was 6'2" and built accordingly, I suppose. And sometimes I'd come home from work and he'd give me an old belt in the shoulder, like, you know, kind of, how was your day kind of thing. Like, and I'd say, go easy, Jack, go easy. And then he'd hug you, which was probably worse than getting the slap, because he was a strong man, like, you know, but gentle. He had a presence, definitely. He could he'd walk into a room there and he wouldn't have to say anything. He'd just smile and, you know, he'd just take over.
Yeah.
And, you know, great witted. You know, he'd...
very funny.
You know, yeah.
Very funny chap.
But then, on the other hand, this... funny kind of gregarious people person, but he wanted to be an accountant from when he was very young.
From when he was eight, he decided he was going to be an accountant.
He was studying at CIT.
He was in CIT, absolutely loved it, and he was in Eden Hall. He stayed in the student accommodation in Eden Hall. Oh, he was just so happy there, and he really enjoyed from the very start. He really, really enjoyed it. Yeah. And he made great friends with a lovely chap down there, Kevin, from Abbeyfield. And he was totally taken with Kevin. And they were great pals, and Mikey and Dahi in the accommodation. And he just loved. He was really happy.
So he had adjusted well to, to being
absolutely
away from home and all that. Kind of. But he came home every weekend for training.
He came home every
and for washing, I presume.
Thursday, in the first semester, he was finished on the... He had no college on Friday, so he used to come on Thursday evening. So on the rare occasion, he got a bus. I would collect him in care, but mostly I went to collect him. When he was in college on Friday.
You drove down to
Bishopstown. And so the car could nearly drive itself there.
Right.
You know? Yeah. And then we'd make the pit stop, like to Corba Court for the dinner, or, the food was always high on the agenda on the way home.
Okay, so then on the 2nd of August, he headed down to the Independence Festival, which was on in Mitchelstown. When was the last time you spoke to him, Elaine?
When I was going out to work on that Friday morning, I just tapped on the door as usual, and I just popped in, and I just told him to mind himself. And as anyone know me, don't do anything queer, I said, and that's the way I'd speak.
Yeah.
That's what I said to him. And he said to me, Ma'am, I love you, you're my best friend. Now, he always said that to me, so that wasn't anything unusual. And I just went off to work, quite happy. Jack was going off to have a good weekend.
And Johnny, were you talking to him before he went?
Yeah, he left around the house around 10:15 because he was getting dropped down. And like Elaine, I said, look, I said, Jack, be careful, mind yourself. And he replied, sure, look, Dad, I was there last year, you know. I guess if he was a veteran of going to this, this was his second ever concert, I suppose, that he ever went to, like, you know. Yeah. And that was the last we spoke to him that morning.
And given the kind of guy he was, would you have had worries that he would have been taking drugs or anything like that? That wouldn't have crossed your mind heading down to this? No.
Never.
Because, like,
never.
The sounds of him, you think, you know, outgoing guy, interested in people, sport, all that kind of thing, that we would have a stereotype that kind of guy...
Yeah, I suppose...
I texted him at 6:15 when I was finished work. I texted him. I said, I'll leave him the few hours and then I'll text him. Yeah. I texted him at 6:15 and there was no reply. And normally within 10, 15 minutes I get a reply ever of a text, you know, and I didn't. And I thought it was a bit strange by 7 o'clock. But I still didn't think anything of it. I said, oh, he's having a good time and, you know, he'll text back tonight. And then Johnny rang me at 9.
Just after nine.
I was out walking and I knew it was really strange for Johnny to ring me when I was out walking. And then he got the call and we went.
So you had got a call from a colleague in Cork, Johnny?
I got a call from a colleague in Clonmel. And I had just been texting him a short time previous, like next thing the phone rang, like, you know, and he advised me that I was to ring Cork University Hospital immediately, ICU. And
so you knew then?
I knew, 9:01, you know, I was just settling to watch the news and, the rest.
What did they tell you when you rang hospital?
I had a job getting through, not through the hospital. I couldn't find a buyer or I couldn't find anything and the house would be full of them. And they just advised that we should get down immediately. That was the advice, you know, and they were brilliant, absolutely brilliant down there. From the minute we arrived down the door, like, I mean, you can imagine waiting rooms and hospitals and there was two receptionists and one of them just downed tools and brought us straight to ICU in Cork, like, you know. And
what was the scene you were confronted with there?
Well, I suppose initially I met two colleagues that who are now both stationed in Cork, but both happened to be in Tipperary at one stage, which was a comfort in itself.
Yeah.
One of them, Brendan Ryan, I suppose
kind of rare
Jack as well, like, you know, Jack being an only child, would have been around the Garda station a lot, and everybody knew him. All my colleagues knew him, like, you know. So, I mean, like, Brendan kind of would mind him if I got caught late for work over in different shifts and everything else if Lane was working. So, I mean, that was a comfort. We met Dr. Meek, the consultant, and I suppose he shot from the hip, and we're delighted for that as well, like, you know. I mean, he asked us, were we ex-parents? And he informed us straight out. He says, Jack is seriously, seriously ill and his life is in danger.
Okay.
And that's without having seen Jack or anything else, like, you know, but he prepared us. He prepared us and I suppose it's prepared as best you could. I mean, we weren't prepared for what we saw, but, you know, they did absolutely everything in their power. I mean, we can't praise them enough. Like,
their kindness to Jack and kindness to us. And, oh my God, they did absolutely everything they could.
Everything.
And did you find out at that point what they knew about what had happened to Jack, or what's your understanding now about what happened, Johnny?
Well, I suppose our understanding was like that we knew he was at the festival and he took this substance. We'll eventually find out what it is and what concoction it was, and that he took ill and knew immediately himself, thankfully, that this isn't right, and sought medical advice from the medical team in the tent below in in Mitchelstown at the Indie Festival, like, you know, and they reacted as promptly as they could and did everything they could as well. Like, you know, we have spoken to everybody, I suppose, in the that had dealings with Jack to try to piece it all together. He took the substance and he reacted badly to it. That was it. I mean, like, when we were just talking at home the other night, like, that, I mean, Jack couldn't even take a Panadol because he'd start reaching. He'd start, you know, physically start, you know, I can't swallow it. Like, so it just was strange and surreal, I suppose, in a sense, like, you know, and he was brought into Cork, and I suppose how it transpired was, like, Jack had only, he'd only his safe pass or something on him, and his wallet or something, like, with a name, so obviously University Hospital in Cork made inquiries with my colleagues in Tork or see was there anybody by the name of Jack Downey on the system, and it just happens that another colleague that happened to be in Clonmel at one stage with me was walking through the office and said, Jesus, there's a Jack Downey in Clonmel, and that's how it snowballed for us, in the sense that, you know, it was what do you want to say, the stars were aligned in such and such a way that, you know, like, I mean, here was three colleagues that are now back down in Cork, and they all knew him as well, like, you know, so I mean, which was a blessing. I mean, if we said it, and if he had gone back to the tent or something, like, you know, I said, I'd sleep this off, you know, we'd be in a worse position. Look, the result would have probably been the same, but there'd be a lot more questions.
Okay, so you did get some comfort out of the way it's all happened in a way, because I think that's
about the
surprising
people
who were
around, you know, even the fact that Brendan was waiting for us when we arrived to ICU was very important to us, wasn't it, John?
It was, like, you know, and he was in touch coming down the car, like, you know, another colleague drove us down because Dennis O'Brien, and we were in touch, like, you know, they couldn't inform us anymore at the time, my colleagues, because they were working on Jack.
And was there a sense then that Jack seemed as if he was rallying for a while?
Oh yeah, certainly. Like, again, the nurses that were there were absolutely fabulous. And, you know, on the first night, that's the Friday night into the Saturday morning, he refused the dialysis because his organs were shutting down and he just was rejecting it. But then as the day progressed, he didn't deteriorate, I suppose, you know. He didn't improve, but he didn't deteriorate. And then on the Saturday night, you know, we got a couple of hours rest in the hospital, and before we left Jack, Andy says, look, he's taking to this, and, you know,
he was on dialysis.
He took it to the dialysis afterwards, like, you know, and that was a positive. Then Sunday he was stable, I suppose. Stable is the word, you know. And then again, Andy on the nurse on Sunday night, like, you know, he says just before 1 o'clock, like, you know, we left him going for, put the head down for a little while. And then he informed us that his pH was up from 6.1 to 6.22. He said, it's not massive, but it was going the right direction. It's, you know, it's, things are, you know, and we went to bed kind of, always hopeful, like, you know.
Yeah.
You know. And then the following morning, it was the changeover is at 8 o'clock, and you know, it was, we knew that there'd be an hour and a half of a changeover with different shifts, but we weren't getting in, you know, and so we weren't forcing our way in or anything else, or they weren't refusing us, but they just said, no, just now. And we kind of knew then at 10 on Saturday morning.
Monday morning.
Right, things didn't go as well as, you know.
Elaine
had been in with Jack at 4 or 5 o'clock with my brother Gabriel, or Gabs, he'd killed me for calling Gabriel, Gabs at 4 in the morning, and, you know, it just, they had tried everything, you know. 12:10 then.
He brought us into the room.
They brought us into the room, and just.
Oh, you know, when you're brought into that little room.
Right.
Yeah.
And was it at that point that everybody came to see Jack, or when did that happen? Because I gathered there was
they had been coming
inside in the ICU
from
early Saturday morning.
Early Saturday morning.
when word hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they started to come on Saturday morning and up to Saturday night. Noreen and Eddie from Clamalogue, they were still there. And Sunday, people came. But then Monday, it was just the floodgates opened and they came from everywhere.
Yeah,
and
literally.
The nurses, Rose said, bring in...
We're bringing two at a time, like, you know.
And they actually just let us bring everyone into ICU.
And Johnny, it was important to you for, like, obviously you wanted everyone who loved him to see Jack, but it was important to you on another level as well, wasn't it? You wanted people to see.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, see Jack there lying in the bed and tubes coming out of him everywhere. Not a sight anyone wants to see, but...
We were duty bound, Johnny, to do it. We had to do it to the boys. We had to.
Like all his mates, like, you know, some of them were there since they were in national school together, like, you know, and they didn't want to come in, but nobody was forced to come in over and in.
Yeah.
But it was something we had to do, Elaine said. Like, we were duty bound that they saw him as they were. My brother did say to me at one stage, he says, look, he says, this is your time.
Yeah.
And I said it to Elaine, and she said, no. Bring them all in, like, you know, they had to see him.
Yeah,
you know, because
why?
I won't say shock factor, but yeah, obviously yeah. Shock would be there. Like, you know, like, it's one mistake, and that's I can with 26 years in Garda Síochána, I can put my hand on my heart and say that's what it was. You know, because I would know if he had tried something. You know, you'd know the difference from a hangover from taking a substance.
Yeah,
and like Jack May. You know, he'd always be up in the morning and he loved going to work. Yeah. Jason, I mean, you wouldn't think it around the house, but he loved actually going to work,
yeah.
You know, in the 3 summers that he worked. But the lads had to see Jack.
We couldn't see the fine man Jack was. And then there he was, tubes and his kidneys were gone, his liver was gone. There was nothing to salvage from Jack. The doctor said there wasn't one organ.
You know.
They're our lovely boy. Ravaged.
Yeah. That big fine man. Little.
And he loved all the boys and they had to come in and see him. Yeah. And I want them all to see so that none of the rest of them would ever, ever end up like that.
And Elaine, you think he had a tear in his eye at the end?
He had.
Yeah.
He had. Definitely. He had a tear in his eye. When the last boy went... He had a tear in his eye. Yeah. And, but the hospital, every single person we met was just fantastic.
And the funeral, again, an extraordinary outpouring. And the guards, the GA, I think even the local supermarkets
absolutely
came on board with
hotels,
everything.
You know, I mean, I came...
Everyone, Clamalogue.
Everyone just rallied. Like, as I said, there was... I'm only still getting to hear bits and pieces of it, like, you know, but I mean, various supermarkets just rang and said, give us a list, you know, what you want, from butter to milk to bread to cling film to, you know, hotels giving chairs, absolutely everyone. I mean, you just couldn't thank him enough, like, you know. And I said, but also, I suppose, you got to say, like, you know, in the ICU in Cork, that there was, there's 10 beds there at the time, like, you know, and there were, you know.
And we're so thankful to all the other
patients
and their families.
We were allowed to come in, like, because there was nine other families inside there with their own issues and serious problems. And everybody with the same worries, I suppose, at the time, like, you know, but not once did anyone ever complain and say, here, stop, how come they can get in and, you know. I said, just couldn't praise him enough across the board. But, yeah.
And you buried him in his Deb suit. So he'd been to his own Deb's. Jack was due to go to a Deb's week.
Mm-hmm. He was going to a Deb's on the Tuesday after the long weekend. And he had bought the corsage and we collected it on the Tuesday morning and gave it to Emma. And, I went to see him all off then to the Deb's. I took Jack's place for the pictures.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was buried with a letter as well. Tell me about the letter.
He was buried with a letter from a very special friend, Ellie May. who's watched this space, he told me. She's a star. She's going to be the next Katie Taylor. So he was tremendous friends with Ellie. And yeah, she wrote him a letter and we put the letter in as near his heart as we could. So that's with him.
So, Johnny, you make the point that, like, nobody is immune to this. Like, ye would have thought, as I'd say a lot of parents do, that this is not going to be something that will come and visit our house. But you kind of think people need to be more aware that it could be.
Absolutely. Look, I mean, my profession and everything else, Jack was well versed on the dangers, and perhaps there might have been few incidents would have happened in Clonmillan. He'd sometimes ask about it, and I'd say such and such a thing to him, like, and he'd say, "Dad," he says, "you never know what's going on in somebody else's house, you know." From my profession, kind of thing, like, you know. But yeah, I would never have suspected it was going to be our check. But it affects everybody, I think, you know. I mean, the cards and letters we've got, we've only opened a fraction of them, and, you know, people are relating where it's happened to them, up the country, down the country. You know, like, these are young, smart, educated people that think they're invincible. There's no class in it. And it's all around us, I suppose. And I suppose we're afraid to ask the questions of our own. Is this, or are they, or are you? Because we probably put ourselves into a bubble, thinking it's okay.
Never going to happen to us.
It's not going to happen to us. But unfortunately, it has happened to us. And we need to cop on, I suppose. You know, take a bit more looking around ourselves, looking at his mates and everything else. I mean, not blaming his mates or anything, like, I'm just saying it's just so...
No, absolutely
it's
not.
So
there's
prevalent.
No suggestion that absolutely. Any of them are involved
It's so prevalent in a sense that we're oblivious and we just turned a blind eye, I think, you know. And I suppose we were talking, coming up in the car, like, you know, that Celtic Tiger, the money is allegedly back. But it's just so easy for young fellas and young ones to fall into this trap and say, sure, look, I'll get the buzz and I'll be grand. Drink a glass of water and it'll be all gone again tomorrow, kind of thing, you know. But there's no quality control in this, Brendan. Like, you know, it's the words have often been bound about, like, there's a bad batch. There's no such thing, you know. It's all bad. There's no way to say that it's got this much proof of anything in it, like, compared to a drink or whatever else, like, you know.
And you see a lot of it going through the courts, Johnny. You know, what you do as a guard is present in the courts. Do you think is there anything we can do? You know, people talk about drug testing or legalising it or anything like that. I know you're probably not wanting to make a big political point, but
no,
from your own perspective, do you see anything we could do to help this kind of thing not to happen?
I suppose we need to talk. That's the bottom line. It's not about legalising it or anything else like that. Like, you know, I mean, often seen many cases come before the court, like, you know, and like that, it would have been their first offence, and very, very, again, well-educated people and good professions and just going to these festivals and concerts and I'm not knocking them by no means, but it seems to be just kind of a part and culture of them. And thankfully, they're, you know, they've made a mistake and they've got away with it. You know, other people,
and get lucky, and then there's the kid who'll get unlucky and react badly.
And that's it.
Elaine, what message would you like to give people about this and mothers and that?
It's just for people to be more aware, because, like, I would never have thought it would have happened to me. Never thought, you know, my fine son would be in the cemetery. Just for people just to be more aware of what's going on in the circle, in the with kids, with teenagers, with their lives are so different to ours, you know, of what we would have went through when we were 19 and 20. And I suppose it just makes you more aware of what's the reality of life now. And the awful, we're all heartbroken and there's no way back for us, do you know, but there might be for someone else.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And you see, I think everybody, people who haven't had the same circumstances as you, but every family in some way, I think, understands on some level where you're at the moment. I think every family in some way has been touched by that phone call and everything changes. There's lots of texts from people. Margaret says, I'm so devastated listening to your guests over the loss of their beautiful son. How can our society continue to overlook this awful situation where families have to go through this nightmare? My thoughts are with the dear parents and the extended family. Sincere and heartfelt sympathy to Elaine and Johnny, and may Jack rest in peace. We lost our son in a tragic accident 10 years ago. Times will get better. It takes years, but you'll never forget him. You'll never lose your love for him. When you grieve, let it wash over you. When you've happy times, enjoy them wholeheartedly. They will eventually become the majority. We need to stamp out drugs. Where is the government in all of this? Mary says, what an incredibly brave couple. My prayers are with them. Another texter says, I'm standing in my kitchen making breakfast for my two teenagers with tears running down my face. My thoughts are with your guests. Another texter says, Brendan, I'm en route to Cork via Clonmel. We met Jack's funeral cortege. It brought up a very important conversation with our children and again on the ferry with another family. Please pass on our condolences to the family. Nora in Westport, we all have tears in our eyes listening to that lovely couple. Jack was lucky to have such parents. Our best wishes and prayers with them. Another texter says, what incredible people your guests are, facing every parent's worst nightmare with dignity and grace. My heart goes out to them. Awful tragic story, Brendan. Would they welcome drug testing at drug festivals? I think that drug testing at festivals is a complicated area because I don't necessarily know that it will catch.
I'm not endorsing the indie festival or anything else I can know, but I do know it is a very, very well-run festival. I do know loads of people that were turned away. They did everything humanly possible, bar strip searching and turning them inside out. So we have discussed it. There's no blame to be appropriated to the festival or anything else. I do know that it had a profound effect on everybody there as well. I had my own niece attended it, and when her mother rang her to say, you're coming home, she was like a briar, I suppose. When she saw Jack then, like, she just realised, like, you know, the enormity of everything that was there. Like, you know, it was tragic, but definitely the indie festival, and I'm not endorsing it, but it's a very, very well-run festival with good people behind it, and that has come out to the fore, you know.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And Elaine, I know this can't be easy to come in here and do this, and it must all seem unreal talking about Jack, who was there a few weeks ago on the radio now talking about him in the past tense. But when you hear people saying about how it started a conversation in the car, or, you know, that it's making people aware, presumably that's some small comfort you can get out of this.
Yeah, it is. And it's like, poor Jack, the way his life ended, that wasn't the way he lived his life, and it's so tragic, and everyone is really, really heartbroken. But like, people are such a support to us, aren't they? And we really appreciate every text and every call and every card and every letter written, and we just wouldn't be able to even thank everyone that's helped us, you know. Yeah.
Well, look, thanks to both of you for doing this, because as I say, I know it would probably be easier not to. Johnny and Elaine Downey, thank you very much. There's one last text I want to read to you before we go. Brendan, how proud Jack would be of his wonderful parents. You're both inspirations. Look after each other. So
thank you.
Everyone would agree with that. Okay, we'll take a break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.